Celeb Savant is a career retrospective type interview focusing on singers, actors, and industry experts. Join Barrett Edelstein now as he dives into the entertainment world.
Billy Raffoul is a Canadian singer, songwriter, and producer. He naturally absorbed a lifelong passion for music from his father, Jody Raffoul, who shined as a singer and songwriter himself. Perfecting his songcraft and voice, Billy dropped music at a prolific pace, including the 1975 EP, the Running Wild EP, Live in June, and the full-length LP, A Few More Hours at YYZ. Among many highlights, Acoustic eclipsed 87.3 million plus Spotify streams, and Easy Tiger reeled in 25.7 million Spotify streams. He progressed with his next album for all these years, featuring the singles Better, I Wish You Were Here, and Bliss. He notably performed alongside Kings of Leon, Phoenix, and American Authors, in addition to collaborating with Amistad, Caitlin Tarver, and JJ Wild. Plus, he garnered the 2021 SOCAN Songwriting Prize for Western Skies and the 2023 Indie Song of the Year for We Could Get High. Billy releases his self-titled album Billy Raffoul in 2025. Up next on the Celeb Savant, discussing his journey in the entertainment world and his upcoming tour in South Africa in May and June of 2025, is Billy Raffoul. Where in the world are you and how are you doing?
Well, first of all, thank you for having me. I'm happy to be on it. I'm in Toronto, Ontario, Canada.
So, Billy, let's rewind. At what age, whether as a child or teenager, did you feel cool? I want to be in this creative world. And how did that journey progress?
I was 10 years old when I got my first guitar. My father's been a musician his entire life. So I was around it a lot, you know. I got my first guitar from him when I was 10. I started writing songs when I was 12, 13. I didn't have my first show until I was 15. I didn't really take it seriously, I don't think, until I was, you know, about 16 years old, where I really wanted to do this.
What was the trigger in your brain to say, okay, this is what I want to do at that age?
I kind of fell into it slowly. It's in a way the family business, right? Having my dad, that's all he'd ever done. And I was around it so much, so it was just always there. It wasn't like this, oh man, this is this cool, unique thing, because to me, this was every day, right? Music, yeah. Around the house, seeing shows, going to shows. That was how my dad provided for the family, right? So it wasn't like this mysterious thing to me, music. I don't know. I think it just naturally happened. When I was really young, it wasn't like the only thing I wanted to do. I was into sports. I wasn't picking up the guitar like at 7 or 8 years old and going like, this is it. Yeah, I kind of fell into it. And then when it was time to start playing gigs, I really threw myself into it full time. And yeah.
At age 16, you said you started playing gigs, you threw yourself into it full time. How did that then transition to become more professional and at least get success in the world?
I think it was just one day at a time. Like my father, you know, if I've gotten anything from him, I feel like just watching his work ethic, you know. Especially when I was growing up and I was younger, he was gigging like 6 nights a week. So it wasn't about signing a record deal or trying to be anybody, you know. I wanted to just play shows every night. That's what he was doing, and I got to see him day in, day out do that. And I'm like, I just wanna play the next show. I just wanna book the next gig. And that's how it started. Started with a talent show at my high school when I was like 13 or 14. My first actual gig was when I was 15, but it was kind of like it was really like a warm-up thing, and I probably shouldn't have been paid for it. But then the next year when I was 16, I started playing in bars. I remember, you know, getting my hands marked so I couldn't drink, but I would be playing, you know, playing 3-4 hour sets, and that was it. Yeah, it just next show, next day, next week, trying to get better and better, incorporate more original music, as much original music as I could into my sets, which is kind of difficult when you're, you know, hired to be the bar band or the bar musician, play the hits, right? So I got in a few tricky areas with bar owners and stuff like that, where I'd go play Let's say I'm playing 30 songs in the night, and if 10 of them are originals, that's an issue.
So how did you deal with those tricky situations in the bar owners? Like, was it sweet talking, or what was the, how did you sort that out?
There's a couple instances where I might not have got called back. I didn't make it easy on anyone. I think I was either playing original music, or even the songs that I was playing that weren't mine were not very popular. I was a really, really big fan of the Black Keys. I still am, but like in high school, that was my band. So I was just so into their entire catalog, and I would play like early Black Keys songs from their first two, three albums acoustically, which made no sense because that's not how they should have been represented. So on top of that, they knew my original stuff was mine because they for sure had never heard it. And then they also thought the covers that I was doing were mine as well because they were so different than what they're supposed to sound like.
Now, moving into professionally, being an observer of your father and of being an observer of the world in a day-to-day basis, but then when you officially got into it professionally, were there any aspects that were surprising to you that, oh, this is actually part of it, and I didn't realize that this would be part of it?
Not anything big that I can think of that I was not expecting this. That's because I was lucky and I got to see him on every level. Like I saw my dad open for Bon Jovi in a stadium, and then also saw him play at the dive bar in our hometown. So I could see the journey and a lot of the shit that came with it, the tough stuff. I hope that doesn't sound big-headed. I'm just thinking like there wasn't anything that was like, okay, this is weird or this is tough. And then I've always had him to, call and say like, get some perspective on certain things that I know he's dealt with. And
And does he still perform?
absolutely, yeah. We
How
perform together, we write together.
Okay.
Yeah.
How do you create a song? Is it easy for you to do? Is it something that comes naturally?
I think it can be easy to make a bad song. So I wouldn't say it's easy. I would say it's frequency. And I think for me, I'll get into these grooves where I'm like, okay, it's like an itch, you feel the itch to write, right? I'm not gonna lie and say I was like, I'm writing every single day of the year, because I'm not. When I know that it's time to write, I am nonstop. Like this new record that's coming out in July, for example, I wrote it in January and February of 2024, and I started on January 1st. And I wrote every single day for 2 months. And I ended up with like some 45, 48 songs. Hence the easy to write bad ones, because they were not all great. Apart from one song that I brought from earlier, that album was written in this little room that I'm in right now and over the course of 60 days. And I wrote every single day. So that's kind of like been my process. Of course, there's been times where like, I've been doing this. I've been putting out music for almost 10 years, and I've been writing for like, I guess, 17 or 18. And there's been times where I won't intend to be writing, and then I'll think of something, or something will pop into my mind, and I'll write that down, or I'll sing a melody into my phone, or whatever the case may be. But I very much get into a rhythm of like, okay, I'm writing this week, and I'm just going to sit down. I have a typewriter, I have pen and paper, I have my laptop, my phone, whatever, all these different things that I can, put ideas down.
Do you mean an old school typewriter?
Yeah, kind of went a little crazy during COVID collecting and like learning about them. And it's tough because you could find so many cool old actual typewriters, but then to find the spool and the ribbon is
Yes.
very difficult. So I had to look into where I could get those remade because now I got like five or six typewriters to have
Wow.
space.
What percentage of the time, you mentioned that you collaborate or you write with your father. What is percentage of the time is you writing by yourself and you collaborating with others?
So it depends on what I want to do, really. Like, there are people that I love to go back to that are friends that I bounce ideas off of, and I've had great, great co-writers over the years, and I've been so fortunate to meet some people. When I started working like with a record label and a publisher, I was thrown into like hundreds of rooms with different people and learning how to kind of like coexist in a creative space and get the best thing out of it. Recently, like for this new record, I'm the only writer on it. I did it on my own. It's probably my third record that I've done like that, where I've done it entirely on my own. I do like that. I do love working with people though. Like it's not like It's not like a Batman thing. Like, oh, I want to work alone. Like I just when it feels right, when it feels like, okay, this collection of songs needs to come from one singular voice with no outside influence.
So I love me a CD. I still budget for my CDs every month. For me, it's an energy exchange to you guys to say thank you for all the hard work that you do. I love the journey of the choice, the experience of unpacking the booklet, the thank yous, listening to song from one to whatever numbers on the album. I'm unsure if you're aware, massive comeback of physicals around the world. Vinyls last year, the year before, 5.9 million sales in the UK, the biggest since 1990. Also last year in the UK, there's a basket of products that they gauge exchanges on in order for tax purposes. I'm not sure what purposes. There needs to be a certain amount of exchanges every day for a product to be in the basket. And because of the upsurge of CDs again, now that product is in the basket again, the research is showing that it's the teenagers, the younger kids that are diving into the world. And we also have the streaming platforms that people consume music on. What are your observations of the landscape at the moment?
I'm really happy with the resurgence of vinyl for sure, especially from somebody who, you know, I make my living touring, you know, live shows, merchandise is a huge part of that. I'm also just, like you said, like you mentioned, listening to an album front to back, how it was intended, how it was recorded. That's the biggest plus side to this for me. I think even beyond the fact that people are buying physical music, I think what comes along with that is that, yeah, you have to sit down and listen to it straight through. And that's the most exciting thing to me, because when I make records, when I make albums, I'm always thinking about them as a whole. Even when I do release albums single by single, one a month in this kind of modern cadence, that's not thought about until the very end. Like, the album is an album first, and it's 10 songs or 11 songs or 12, whatever it is. It's a collection, and there's connective tissue between the songs, and the song comes after the last one for a reason and before the next one for a reason. And that's always been super important to me. So the fact that people are consuming music in this way now, and there's a resurgence of it, means that they're hearing an album how you intended them to hear it. And that's important.
Okay, so this is interesting for me. So you mentioned maybe from the experience of the previous or this latest album that's coming out that you recorded last year, you mentioned there's a through fare or golden thread through the album. So how do you know, or how do you choose the 10 or 12 or 13 songs that are going to be part of that thread? Yes, there are some bad ones, but there are others that are, I'm sure, fantastic and great. But how do you know that, okay, well, this is not part of that thread? And do you ever take those songs that are still great and then put them part of another thread?
Absolutely. I've been not very good at this for a couple different reasons, and I'll take some of the blame, but not all of it. You know, when you're in a modern record deal with a record label, sometimes collections of songs are grouped together that weren't intended to be, but they are for different strategic reasons. And that's something that I've had to do in the past that I hope to never have to do again. If you're a music listener, it's very apparent where you hear albums and it's like, oh, wow, a couple of these tracks do not sound like they should be on the same project together. I have that feeling about some of my albums, for sure. Especially my first one, my third one, it was serving a different goal and not to be a collection of songs. And I, like I said, hope to never do that again. And for this self-titled record that's coming in July, as well as another project that I'm also working on, the songs, I was very, very cutthroat about what's going on these records because of that. And I don't, like I said, I want everything to sound like it's done in the same time, in the same room even, you know, like in the same thought. And like even the self-titled record, it had 12 songs on it for the first 9 months. I think it was actually delivered to the record label with 12 songs. And then I stuck to what I'm just telling you about right now. And I made the call to pull one of them off because it was just outside of what I feel like the message is or the sound is.
But you'll keep that song in the bank for a potential another package or...
So it is already in a different group.
Okay,
good. It has been reimagined in the case that I believe it should have been from the beginning. So that's where.
Now, what do you enjoy? Were you coming to South Africa shortly for a tour? What do you enjoy about performing live?
It's the whole reason I started doing this. I mean, as much as I do love creating music in the studio and recording albums and releasing them, they've always just been a means to tour and a means to get into a room with people. That's what I fell in love with music for in the beginning. And this is just a dream to get to go to a place on the other side of the world and play my songs for people who want to hear them. That's probably what I enjoy the most, getting into a room with people who are excited to hear this music and singing along, and the banter and the talking and the back and forth. I mean, stuff that you can only do in intimate venues, and thankfully I'm playing smaller rooms, so it's like it's a good feeling to be able to have that connection.
I'm that dude that's standing right up in front. I'll take my cell phone out for a couple of videos, a couple of photos, and I put it away. I find these days people are taking out their cell phones for a lot of the time, posting, tweeting, videoing. You reference that connection. Do you find that the cell phones from the person who's seeing a bunch of them potentially is taking away from that connection, or it's just where society is at the moment?
I would love to be like Jack White and say like, I want to check everyone's phone at the door. And I applaud him for that. It's great, like when he's done that, or artists who do that, that's great. I don't have a feeling either way about it, because truthfully, the people who are filming the shows and sharing the stuff on social media, the next day they wake up and they post it, and maybe somebody sees it and they go, oh, what was that? I really like that. I want to be a part of that next time they come to town. And that's happened a ton for me, especially for up and coming artists who are trying to spread the word. So much so it's a bit in one of my songs every night, where I specifically ask the audience to clip a piece of this next song. It's a comedic thing, but I'm not like staunch against it. I get it. And when I go to shows, I'm the same way. Like maybe I take a photo or a small clip, but I'm there, especially when it's a band I really really want to see, or an act I really want to see. But to each his own. Some people film because they want to relive it the next day, and there's nothing wrong with that.
You've got the album coming out in July. You're going to be coming to South Africa shortly. What's coming up next and thereafter?
I have a North American tour that is currently 22 dates across the US. We're about to add 10 or so shows in Canada. So that'll turn into like a 30 plus date tour in the fall to support the self-titled record that's coming in July, which is, I'm really excited. I'm hoping to play it in its entirety most nights. And then there's a surprise coming after that that I'm going to hopefully surprise people with.
Have to stay tuned for
Yes,
that.
yes.
Billy, so I love this game. I know I've had to ask you this question in 2 years, 5 minutes, 5 hours. I know your answer will be different every time. I understand that and I recognize that. I'm not saying favorite, I'm saying top of mind. If you
Okay.
had to push play to five artists once you finish this conversation, who would those artists be? And if you can think of specific songs from those artists, what would the songs be? But if you can't, just the top five artists that you'd say, cool, I want to listen to this person, that band. Who would they be?
When I'm into something, I'm like heavy into it. Like I have to exhaust it and understand everything, every. It's like when I hear it, like most people, right? You hear a new song, you really love it. You're not going to just listen to it once and then revisit it in a few weeks if you like to listen to music. So this is an easy question for me, because right now I can just tell you what I've been listening to in the last 2 weeks, I guess, pretty nonstop. I'm a massive fan, and I keep bringing them up, of a band called Wonder Horse. I see them live whenever they come through Toronto. The new record, Midas track, Arizona. MJ Lunderman as well, who was just in Toronto the last few nights. There's too many great songs on this record, their new record. But his new record, I think probably Manic Fireworks, the title track. That one would be up there. I love the new Ed Sheeran song, Old Phone. I think it's great. I love the concept. That would be up there. Audrey Hobart, Sue Me. Hobart, I think is how you say her last name. It's a brand new song. It's her first song as an artist, I'm pretty sure. And I heard that the other day for the first time and loved that. Emily James, who's a label mate of mine, she has a song called Song for Brian. That's really, really great.
I haven't heard of those, so I have to add some of those to my list. So thank you for that.
Yeah, it's like a, it's a, it's a really across. I mean, there's like, that's across the,
Genres and the spectrum.
yeah. There's some there's singer songwriter. There's rock, heavier rock pop, and yeah. It's all there.
When you're listening to songs by other artists, are you able to just relax and listen to them for what they are, or is your creative brain unpacking what you're hearing?
Oh yeah, I'm annoying as hell. I'm not. I like to, especially. I like to keep up with who's doing what, and I'm obsessive over it. And I like to, especially when it's certain genres. I feel like I can hear through lines of similarities, you know, from production to, oh, maybe this person worked on this or this person worked on that, and so I immediately need to know, you know, the song info, the credits. I'm a lyric person, so I'm constantly listening through. Most of the time, I can make out everything on first listen, but if I can't, I have the lyrics up as well. And
I'm not sure if you are aware of NLP, which is neuro-linguistic programming. So that's the way people process information. There's a subsection within that called processing skills. Each of us have a dominant one, a secondary one, and a tertiary one. Dominant means you'll be in it for most of the day. Secondary, maybe a couple of hours. Tertiary, maybe half an hour. So the three of them are visual people. So visual people create pictures out of what they're hearing. While I'm talking now, they're actually processing with a picture in their brain. Auditory people, it's about the words, the sentences, the paragraphs, understanding in that context. Kinesthetic people, it's about the energy, the tone of voice, the body language, all those kinds of elements of the interaction. Now, I think you've already answered this question, but just to clarify, when you're listening to songs, is it about creating a picture? Is it about the lyrics or is it about the feeling? You already mentioned lyrics. That's why I'm thinking it's already about the auditory. Am I correct in my perception?
yes, I think auditory first, second is the feeling,
Okay.
third is the image,
The
I
visual.
think. I was having this conversation. I was having this conversation last night with my bandmate Justin, who is someone who I produce my music with, and his band was playing in Toronto, and we were talking about different records and different writers who can paint a picture, even if the lyric is abstract, to paint, you know, a feeling. And then also dip into something that is lyrically very, you know, cohesive, and dip in and out of that. And that just is the sweet spot.
You see, auditory people will be able to, like you said, pick up the lyrics straight away. I'm like you. Visual and kinesthetic people, they actually don't hear the lyrics until like the 30th or 40th hearing. So it's definitely, I agree with you, auditory. It's interesting. There's a lot of people assume that everyone's hearing or experiencing the information the same, where it's never the case.
It's crazy because I'll listen to songs with people who are getting an image or a feeling first, and I'll go, how are you not,
Yes, I'm the same.
how are you not hearing what they're saying, right?
I'm exactly the same. It's like, how can you not what they're saying? And also, a lot of people don't hear the lyrics and they never even know what the song's about until someone actually tells them, do you know actually the song's about this? And they're like, oh no, I didn't even realize.
I've worked with different people like that in the music business, especially on the record label side, and it's amazing to work with somebody on a song or an album for a whole year and a half, and then get to the point where the song's out in the world, and then they have a completely different idea of what it's about, even though the lyric could be plain as day. And I love that, because I love that, you know, some people are like you said, visual,
Yes.
or you know, just, oh, it just feels great. I don't care what it's about, you know.
Exactly. So, Billy, the podcast is listened to throughout the world. As a final message, what would you like to say?
Keep consuming new music. Keep listening out for something you haven't heard before, because there's so much great music coming out now. There are so many new bands, new artists, and I mean, more accessibility to them than ever before. But also keep buying vinyl and CDs.
Yes, Anthony's, yes.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Celeb Savant. Please follow Barrett on TikTok, Instagram, YouTube, and Facebook at Celeb Savant. That's CelebSavant.